Welcome to the Scottish Watches Podcast. This is part two of Watches and Wonders 2021. The last edition went that well that we have decided to bring more idiots onto the show. Some idiots you've heard before, like Dave. Some idiots you've not heard before. So listen to that little laughter going there.
Chuckle.
We tried to cram as much stuff into the previous episode as possible, but there was no way on earth with something like 40 different brands exhibiting up to sort of 10 to 20 pieces per brand. It's just, it's been a hell of a week. It's not done yet. It finishes on Tuesday coming. So when you hear this Monday, there's still another day to go. Although most of the releases have been announced, there's probably one or two things waiting in the wings, because just last night, AP decided to drop something absolutely crazy. Now that could be crazy good, it could be crazy bad, but we will get to that shortly. Mm-hmm. But Dave's on the line with me to start things off, and it's time for the wrist check. So what you got on the wrist tonight, Dave?
Tonight I am actually wearing the King Seiko re-edition. That's what I have on this evening. I only picked it up a few days back, kind of matching up with my re-edition of the first Grand Seiko as well. So yeah, it's very similar in size, but very different aesthetically. So yeah, it's quite pleasing. So yeah, that's what I've been wearing for most of the day.
And what's the story there quickly about Grand Seiko, King Seiko? It usually isn't mentioned. It kind of disappeared. So why is it back?
Yeah, I mean, we could get into that. That's, you could spend a whole episode on that. But broadly speaking,
listen, we don't have Ryan here to tell us all about it. But
I say we don't have Ryan to give us like a diatribe for like six days. Back in the day when Seiko were kind of expanding into, I suppose, higher end watchmaking, they had, probably best describes, an internal kind of competition between two different watch, or two different kind of maisons, I suppose, if you want to call it in that terms. One was known as King Seiko, one was Grand Seiko. They did similar things but differently, and King Seiko was the one that didn't kind of come through in the longer term. To get the best out of people was to pitch one against the other, I suppose, really ultimately is what was done, and see what ideas kind of came through. There's some great vintage King Seiko pieces out there, but I think this one was brought out, announced back into last year, came out at the start of this year, and it was to celebrate kind of, I think, 140 years of Seiko. This re-edition's actually the second design language of King Seiko, the KRK, I think it was, the original one was called. So it's quite angular. So whereas I think the very first generation of King Seikos were quite rounded and quite kind of smooth, quite similarly, to be honest, to a lot of the early Grand Seikos, this one was much more angular, very pronounced lugs.
Like Gary Lineker?
We could call it that if you want, yeah. That joke will go over the head, you realise, of pretty much everyone who's not in the UK, and even the ones in the UK, it'll go over half of their head as well. But yeah, it's a cool looking piece, really nice, a little bit different, really nice box crystal on it, nice kind of subtle sunburst dial. It's got a date in it, which actually doesn't upset me overly much. On this one, probably would have preferred it without a date, but it's been true to the original, so hey-ho. Yeah, nice looking piece. What about yourself? What have you got on the wristage this Sunday?
Wristage and fistage. Well, I do appreciate the sentiment of asking so quickly. You know, working with a professional like yourself, it is such a stark contrast to the last guy we had in your position. But anyway, today...
Not so much professional, just not an idiot, is I think what your phrase you were looking for.
Yes, you're better than a man down.
There we go.
So today I am wearing something that I've been wearing for the last couple of days. This turned up in the post from America, and it is the Nodus Sector Sport Glacial. This is a watch I've seen all over Instagram for a long time, and I kind of begged them back in January if they could send us a test piece out to have a look at, and it turned up kind of unannounced. I'd forgotten all about it. I'd chased maybe once, and I know how busy the guys are, and like Zelos and other micro brands, they sell out quick.
Yep.
So when this arrived in the post, first of all, the FedEx guy decided to deliver it to a completely different address. And it just so happens that the people at that address either were scared I was going to come and kill them, or they were trustworthy, unlike Rick. So what happened was they decided to bring it to my house, and I got the watch, opened it up, and I've never seen a coloured dial like it. It's a combination. It's not 100% aquamarine. It's not 100% turquoise. It kind of shimmers in the middle. It's got a pearl look to it. Date matched disc on the date. Great bracelet. It's a 38mm, and I don't have any 38mm that I know of I've been in before to check out, and this one just wears and disappears. You forget you're wearing it.
Yeah.
So it's not as big as like the Batman that I'm used to wearing, or even the 43.5mm Apollo 8, yeah. But it's also not as small as the Accutron or other things like that. and it is just absolutely fantastic for the money. It's $450 or just about £300, depending on tax and whatnot. It's absolutely first class. Cannot fault it at all.
Colour's lovely. Really nice.
Yeah, it's phenomenal for the cash. A bit like the Zelos, a bit like some of the Christopher Wards that we've had in before. You get so much if you just look closer at some of these micro brands that are out there. Some of them are absolute shite and we will warn you against them. But these guys here are one of the good guys, it turns out. And looking forward to getting some proper photos of it, getting some video done, getting a review on the website sooner rather than later, because they're going to have more of these coming in for summer. But speaking of coming in...
Who have we got now?
Lucy.
Oh, Jesus.
Right, Lucy, you were here the last time. You're here once again. What are you going to talk to us about tonight?
I am. Thank you for having me back. I am going to blast some facts about the new Roger Dubuis, the Excalibur Glow Me Up. Have you guys seen it yet?
I saw the presentation for this one, and it was, for a company that charges so much for their watches, their video was the worst quality I've ever seen. It was complete dog shit. The guy that was presenting it, which is Nicola, he was horrible. The green screen they used was horrible, but the watches were really nice, and I like the sort of loom that they've got with the sapphires and things. But tell us more about it.
So, you know, I'm not a massive fan of too much bling. However, this one I absolutely loved. So you've got the new caliber that's got the star-shaped bridge on it. It's got the single flying tourbillon. It's 42mm in pink gold. But the best bit about it is, I'm coining this the bling bezel. So they've basically patented a world first. So what they actually do is they apply a loom coating to the small grooves underneath the 60 diamond baguettes that circle the dial. So you just get bright colours all around the dial. It's pretty spectacular. Is it actually a piece of art, I think?
Dave, what do you think of that one? Have you had a look?
Probably the bit less I say about that, the better.
I think it's really cool.
Don't get me wrong. From an artistic point of view, sure, yeah, beautifully made and everything else. Aesthetically, yeah, no. Just not me.
Do we know anyone that's ever bought a Roger Dubuis? I mean, I know I've dropped a movement, nearly broke it and stuff. Has anyone actually bought one?
I'm trying to think. I'm actually even more so than that, I'm trying to think, have I ever seen one in the wild that wasn't on someone who works for the company or at a show? Struggling to
think. Is it money laundering?
Oh, I mean, you know, what is it? Allegedly? Is that the phrase you're looking for? Allegedly. Right, yeah. Is it? Who knows? Who knows?
Does Roger Dubuis own tanning shops?
Or nail salons?
we're going right down a hole here that's going to get us into trouble.
Oh, massage parlours as well.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Laundrettes?
Wowza.
That's a common one.
Laundrettes. Jesus Christ. Oh, we're right off the rails and we're only about 10 minutes
we're
in.
Only
fantastic.
10 minutes.
Are you surprised?
No, never with you around. Anything else catch your interest that you've been seeing popping out the last few days?
I am in absolute love with the Arnold & Son, the Luna Magna. I think I love their stuff anyway, but this piece is just beautiful with their 3D moon phase and their little starry bits on the dial.
All that. Well, your cohort is going to be talking about that one shortly.
Okay, shush. I'll shush. I'll let her. I did think just very quickly the clock dial with the actual time on it. I do find a little bit MBNF. If you have a look,
I know what you mean by saying that. You know, you've seen that on some of their stuff, but to be fair, it's also that's quite a classic way of presenting a time watch face within a face that you'll see on kind of a more traditional piece as well. But whilst on the Dubuis, I am not a fan of that you are on this one, I can agree with you. This is a great looking watch. Really, really cool looking watch. Interesting to see it in real life because it's got quite a tall crystal on it because of the size of that 3D moon on there. So it'll be interesting to see. I think it might be quite a large watch in terms of its kind of height, but yeah, definitely nice with that adventuring kind of dial going on, and with the half moon and the adventuring. Pretty special looking piece, and it's quite an interesting little video about how they make the moon and the time and effort.
Well, you can talk about that, Dave,
really
when
good.
Sam comes on, because she's going to be so pissed off
because he doesn't want to talk about this. Roger Dubuis, that's why he's changing the subject.
Oh man. Well, we've got a few minutes left if you want to hang on the line with us. Should we talk about the elephant in the room or the panther in the room even?
Oh, man, right. Ugh. Yeah. Oh.
Right. Well, let's put you in the frame. If you don't know about this, guys, which you obviously do know about this because if you listen to our show, you're on Instagram, you know what's happening in the world. Wow. Right. AP and Marvel were going to do something. Don Cheadle said they were. Took them 4 years, whatever it was, to get the wheels in motion, and they dropped probably the biggest mic drop of the show thus far, probably of the entire show for the whole of the year. Yep. And that is the AP X Marvel Black Panther Tourbillon. Yeah. Tell us about it, Dave. Exactly. That's all you need to know.
I mean, that is all you need to know. Aside from the fact it is truly atrocious looking as a piece. Okay,
it's Invicta levels, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I am more than sure if you got one in your hand, the quality and the level of workmanship and stuff will be absolutely top of the tree, top of the notch. You know, I'm sure it will be. But it just looks atrocious. I was talking about this with some friends last night, and I said the only thing about it that I've found, oh, that's okay, is I quite like the fact that the strap's purple, it's rubber, and I quite like the strap. Aside from that, the rest of it is atrocious. To be fair, the deployment clasp looks quite nice as well, and I believe they're made by Chanel. I believe somebody told me makes their deployment clasps. Maybe true, may not be true, but that's what I'd like to be. But it looks quite cool. But the watch itself is just atrocious. Aside from the acres of conversation we could have about why that character, virtue signaling, various design aspects of it, which are just horrifically bad in bad taste, probably haven't even been thought about. It's just not clever.
It wasn't to pay respects to the actor who passed away that was the lead, was it? Have they said?
So I don't think anyone said, but I mean, the fact that they've chosen, I mean, aside from the fact that they've chosen the Black Panther, and actually if you look a little bit deeper into the movie, the Black Panther movie, and about the whole nature of that movie in terms of, you know, anti-imperialism, anti-establishment, you know, kind of anti-capitalism to a certain extent, and then suddenly you've got a watch that sells for charity. Can't knock that aspect of it, but $5 million, you know, then you've got the whole issue with the hands and where they've been mounted in relation to it, and when it's six, when a hand's pointing at 6 o'clock, it's just not clever. The fact that the tourbillon,
the first thing I thought,
the tourbillon in terms of placement, okay, it's where you would maybe broadly expect to find a tourbillon, but pretty unfortunate. And somebody's got a serious amount of swellage going on with something. It's just not clever in any way at all. I don't get it. The conversation I had last night with some friends as well is, okay, right, so the whole Marvel thing, you know, they want to maybe get in and have a watch that's associated with this franchise that makes a lot of money, yada yada yada. The one character that I thought, who would actually maybe wear something as ostentatious as that watch, etc., etc., would only really have been Tony Stark, let's be honest.
Correct.
He might have been the one that kind of swaggered that, because he's got a bit of kind of that whole arms dealery mentality, you know, that whole arrogance about him as well. Probably could have been seen that. But would he have been wearing it when he was Iron Man? No. Would any of the superheroes be wearing it when they're a superhero? No. Tony Stark, maybe as Tony Stark. Aside from that, mm-hmm. I just don't get it. I don't get anything about it, really. I've been shaking my head about it. I feel it's also, not that it will wreck the brand, because the brand's got heritage and it's got everything else about it as well. But I believe there's also a lot of people who, you know, are into that brand as a serious horological brand that really aren't best pleased about the kind of tone and message that that piece sends out. And I believe there was maybe something happened at a presentation with somebody who maybe took their watch off and walked up to somebody and handed it to them and said he'll never buy a watch from them again and walked off.
Really? So, to do with this watch? This one here?
I believe so, yes. Best not wow. name names and various reasons. But yeah, people aren't best pleased with it by all accounts.
That's a little bit dramatic.
Well, I never realised until maybe a month ago there that there is that kind of elitism to do with certain brands, because speaking of elitism, I was on Clubhouse and I was listening in to one of the chats on there, and it was female watch collectors talking, and yeah. I bundled into one of the rooms to have a listen to what was going on, and I caught the end of a conversation where a female watch collector was saying about another female watch collector that they had said they were no longer going to buy anything Patek produces because the Kardashians wear Patek.
So I suppose when you get
to a certain level, you're going to just throw your toys out the pram for no particular reason.
I think, I mean, let's be honest, you know, we know lots of brands. You know, we talked in a few episodes back about, for example, Nike, you know, not been happy about that pair of Satan trainers. But, you know,
they've all been recalled.
But exactly. They won in court. You knew they were going to win anyway. But the higher you go up the food chain in regards to, you know, elite brands, whether it's, you know, your Ferraris or your Bentleys or your car brands or your ultra luxury watch brands or any of these things, those brands, they will absolutely, you know, kind of protect their brand identity and vision, because people do care. The people that are spending that money care, and the people that are spending that money are the folk who can spend money on whatever they want, broadly speaking, you know. And it does, these brands rely on these people wanting to spend, let's be honest, ludicrous amounts of money on these watches or whatever it is. And it doesn't take much to wreck a brand or to wreck the message that the brand has at that point in time. And I can't help but think that this is a pretty big misstep for them. I might be entirely wrong. I'm no expert in the whole field of marketing, but I know enough about it. And I have worked in the area with various aspects of my work. And it's something you have to tread carefully. And I just can't help but feel this is a big misstep for them. I'm sure a lot of the kind of things that folk are saying about it, you know, we are joking about the positioning of the hands and the tourbillon and everything. I bet you it's not even crossed their mind to a certain extent. But then when you start kind of thinking about it in a bit more depth, it's not clever. And, you know, there's people in those businesses that are paid a lot of money to make sure that these things are thought about before it hits the marketplace. But hey ho, it's AP. You know, they sold it for, what was it, the one of one piece in precious metal, I think, sold for $5 million. Great, that's going to a charity, albeit when you try and find out what the charity actually is, it doesn't actually name a specific charity. I think it's going to help. I think it's going to help kind of teenagers and youth, maybe, I think, is the idea in various aspects, but it was pretty nondescript about who it was.
That's
for.
That's nice and specific.
Exactly, you know, exactly. Mm. But hey-ho, you know.
Well, listen, Ryan, thanks for giving us a 10-minute lowdown on that watch.
You're welcome, thanks. Yeah, just make sure you call me Ryan in this. It was still 20 minutes shorter than his.
And Lucy was here with the stopwatch.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Lucy, thanks for popping in, and tell people where they can find you online and your show.
They can find me at the Watchbox Diaries, and they can catch me and the two Sams at Time of the Week on Instagram and on the Scottish Watchers Live YouTube. Thanks, guys.
And next up, we have what's on her wrist, otherwise known as Barbara Palumbo, joining us from the United States of America to tell us what she's drinking and spitting all over her room.
On my bed. I'm on my bed because you can see me and I can't see you, which I love.
Yes.
Just some Sauvignon Blanc because it's Sunday. And, you know, and honestly, look, what it's actually like 7:30 Swiss time. So if we were in Geneva right now, you know, we'd be drinking anyway. We would have been drinking since like 10 o'clock this morning.
Since last Tuesday.
Yep.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes, it's 100%. So what are you guys drinking? Are you guys drinking?
Yes.
No. No. Oh,
I got a yes and a no.
I've been drinking for a considerable period of time.
What are you drinking, Dave?
I'm a bottle deep in red already. I'm about to crack open a second bottle. So
Jesus
isn't going to save me.
Jesus.
No, but Jesus, anyway. You know, there is like the whole Catholic thing with like red wine and everything. So, but go ahead. This is, we got to get through this. Go ahead, Ricky.
We do indeed. What you got on the wrist?
Oh, I'm double. So I just had the Hermes presentation, which was in French. And only realized halfway through that I could actually click over to a translation to English. But yeah, so I'm wearing a L'Oréal, and then I have on the Jelly Oak, which I just bought it for my son. He is on his way back from Hilton Head, South Carolina, which is a big beach town. He was there all week with his friend at spring break here. I couldn't leave. So my husband and my daughter went away one place, and then my son went away another place, and he borrowed my red Cassie Oak because this hadn't come in yet. So once it came in, I've been wearing the Jelly Oak. So I've got got those two on.
What's your thoughts of the show been so far, and how does it compare to previous years and the in-person meetups that you're accustomed to?
I mean, it's miserable. Like, from the point, it is. Come on. From the point, no, look. Okay, I want to be completely clear here. Based on, like, just compared to last year and what everybody was trying to do with regard to virtual shows and Geneva Watch Days and the things that they were trying to accomplish last year was a mess. But I think they've had a year to really try to get it together. So by rights, in comparison to some of the virtual events last year, this has been brilliant. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. I feel like I would say about 90%. The first day, the first couple of presentations, I had some problems with, but it feels like every day since, they've really been on board. Timing has been great. You know, they're sending you those calendar invites, which is pinnacle for me. I've been up the first day. I got up at 1 a.m. because I wanted to be there for the very, very start of the show, starting with that morning show talk. So I was there, you know, all forward. And then from every day since, I've had to get up usually between 4 and 5. Today was actually my latest day. I got up at 6:45 for a 7 o'clock presentation. So that was like kind of late for me. But and I think tomorrow and Tuesday will be a little bit easier too, around like that 5-6 o'clock mark. I think they've done a really good job. I am going to say that I think it's gone incredibly smoothly. You know, I think downloading the assets could be a bit easier. And maybe that's something that if we ever, knock wood, I hope we don't have to go through something like this in the future. But if there anything like this ever happens in the future, I think the whole assets downloads needs to be a little bit easier. But I think the presentations overall have been great. I was really impressed with Nomos's presentation because I thought it was the anti-marketing presentation. It was just about Glashütte. It was just about the manufacturing of the watches. It was peaceful and quiet. And it was the anti-noise that we've heard from a lot of the different brands, which has been somewhat overwhelming. But again, if you're going to say compared to in-person events, I mean, there is no comparison to in-person events. I'm not getting sloshed with you guys and, you know, at like 3 o'clock in the morning in some dive bar in Geneva. So that is, you can't replace that.
Moving on to the watches, what's been your standouts?
I have a bit of a list. I think from opposite ends, I mean, they're obviously my best in show. It happened on the first day. And for me, I feel like it's yet to be topped just from a wow standpoint. And that definitely was the Hybris Mechanica Caliber 185 from Gégé Lecoultre. The Reverso, you know how I feel about a Reverso. The fact that this is 12 complications, 4 dials, just from the absolute like craziness factor. I mean, at 1.6 million US, I'd have to hit the lottery to be able to get it. I don't even know if I have a friend who's wealthy enough to be able to get it, but I think from the sheer mechanical standpoint of it, you know, and the fact that they still made it in a wearable thickness was pretty important. I mean, that's on the high end. That's my best in show. There's no, just even coming close to that. Indeed. I think like, don't you feel like that, Dave? Like it's just,
yeah,
it's, there was nothing else that wowed me like that wowed me.
I mean, it's ludicrous, you know, it's a 1.6 million dollars US or whatever, you know, 1.3, 1.4 million euros. So it's just pie in the sky. They're making a couple of them, but purely from a technical perspective of just pure unadulterated watchmaking, it is absolutely outstanding. There's no marketing bullshit behind it. There's no, oh, it's sponsored this film, that film, this narrative. It's just, look, we can do this and we've done it. It's a fantastic piece from that nature.
And they're a company that's so old and storied. It's like, you're almost not surprised that they did something like this because they've done such incredible pieces in the past. So that definitely, I think on the high end for me was, it's just, there's no, like I said, there's no top in it. From Lange, I love the little Lange One Moon Phase, the non-diamond. I was really happy about that. I actually, Hermes, I just watched their presentation. The HO8. Now it's funny because somebody said to me, oh, you know, Houdinki's selling it. And I was like, no, I haven't paid attention. They're not really on my radar necessarily. But I like the fact that Hermes came in and they did. I particularly like that titanium DLC with the orange strap. I think just the black and orange, it's very Philadelphia Flyers to me, black and orange, very Halloween to me. But I like that they came in and they're Hermes. And I'm wearing an Hermes. I like Hermes timepieces. I think they, for a company that is so about fashion and jewelry and, you know, bags and shoes and everything else, they really put out solid timepieces and have for years. And I like that they didn't just take a pre-existing timepiece and throw on a, you know, a different strap or make it in a different dial color or a different millimeter size. I mean, they went completely the opposite. They were like, okay, we're going to make a new piece. And there, I can't remember who it was from the Hermes team. This guy literally came out because they're French and because we all know the French are spiky. And they, you know, it's the whole Eddie Izzard routine of like, when all of Europe is doing this, the French is like, yeah, you know what? We're not going to do that. We're going to have a sandwich. Like, it's just kind of like they want to do the opposite of what everybody's doing, or they're just like, we don't really give a crap about it. So they came, so somebody had asked them about the gender neutrality of the watch, and they were like, yeah, honestly, this is a masculine watch. We made this watch for men. And there was, I had such respect for the fact that he came out and said that. I was like, you know what? I mean, I like their balls. Like, it's, you know, I was, I like, okay, I totally get that. On the lower end, I mean, the Oris cotton candy, the Diver 65 cotton candy.
Yep.
I particularly don't, I wasn't a huge fan, or I'm not, I don't think I'd be a huge fan of the all bronze. I think I'd actually like just the bronze case with the leather strap, which I think they show with the green dial. And actually I do like the green dial out of the three. Nomos, which again, I mean, going back to their presentation, then I was, after the presentation, I was completely sort of like zoned in on them. And I love that Club Campus Future Orange, that the 36 millimeter, that orange on the gray strap, I thought, I mean, for like $1,500 US, I just thought that was like just a fantastic piece. And that color orange, again, with everybody doing green this year, just there wasn't a ton of orange. I mean, Zenith did an orange piece because they did all those multicolor pieces, but there wasn't a ton of orange this year. And I really love that Nomos, you know. So yeah, Tudor, I'm always down on Tudor, but I kind of like the Black Bay 925, the silver. I did dig the gold. I thought that was cool too, despite the memes going around about it. And I like the American 1921 in platinum from Vacheron. I think those were probably my picks from the show.
And who are the big stinkers then?
You're not going to get that shit out of me, bro. Sorry. Sorry.
Keep drinking. Nah, we'll come back to you later.
Nah. That's, oh, you know, I mean, no, I'm done. No, you're not going to get that out of me. No, but remember, AP isn't really, they're not part of Watches and Wonders. They didn't show Watches and Wonders. They had a release this week, but kind of like Breitling had a release, but they're still not, they weren't on the list for Watches and Wonders. So I'm only talking Watches and Wonders right now.
Yeah. So political.
I know.
Well, I mean, look, you know.
I'll let you away with it. Well, listen, thank you very much for coming on. Welcome. I know you're super busy. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, listening to you throughout the week, getting up at 1 a.m. when we're kind of swanning out of bed at 8 in the morning. You know, yeah. Heart goes out to you.
It's on. No, it's all right.
We will let you go, and we will be in touch soon because we need to get part two of the MBNF episode recorded as well.
That'd be great. It'd be awesome. Thanks, guys. Stay safe.
Hey, Sam.
Hello, how's it going? Oh no, quick video off.
Too late.
Screenshot accomplished.
Oh, scruffy Sam.
Oops-a-daisy, at least you had clothes on this time.
There you, that's usually after 9 o'clock.
And we have Sam with us, as in the UK, Sam. How are you, Sam?
Hello, I'm good. How's it going?
Not too bad. And how have you been enjoying the last few days of watch absorbing content?
There has been a lot, hasn't there?
There has been a lot, yes.
I feel like I've missed chunks, to be honest. But yes, I'm catching up.
Good.
Got the bulk of it, I think.
Excellent. Yes. And so, what are you on with us today to talk about?
I was going to go for the Arnold & Son Lunar Magna, the volume of the moon.
Very nice.
Yes. Follows on slightly from your lovely HM Perpetual.
Yeah, moon. Indeed. Yeah.
Doesn't it?
Very similar, but very different as well. It's also, I suppose, a very different price point. But what's your thoughts on it then? I mean, I think this is meant to be the biggest three-dimensional moon in a watch, I believe. Is that what they're saying?
Yeah, that's the claim they're going for. Mm-hmm. So like your perpetual moon's got the largest display, so sort of flat display. And then, yeah, this one, they've gone for a 3D moon made of half marble. So the white half is marble and the dark half is the aventurine. 12 millimetre diameter moon. It's sort of at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, so that's a fairly big piece then.
Yeah, probably like, I don't know, I was going to say the size of a small, yeah, small marble.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah, like an actual, probably is, yeah.
An actual marble.
Reminds me of those sweets that came out and half of them were like white chocolate. Another half was normal chocolate.
Oh, there is a hint of that, isn't there? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember what they were called.
What were they called? Oh, that's going to annoy me now. Oh. Damn it. So I'm assuming, Sam, from the way they've done that moon, it's the kind of marble or the kind of light side of it is the moon during the night and the adventuring during the day, or how have they done it?
It's a moon. Oh, no, now you've got me.
Ah, I've got myself as well.
I assumed it was the moon phases, but maybe it's day. You're right, maybe it's daily.
I was hoping you knew the answer.
I thought it was the phases of the moon.
I suppose it could be, yeah. I suppose, yeah, so maybe was... so maybe it's the marble side is as the moon is coming into full moon, and then the darker adventuring side is when the moon is is gone from the view, or is low in the
as
horizon.
As opposed to a day and night display.
Yeah.
How much is this one coming in at?
43,900 Swiss francs, which is about £35,000.
Which is, just shy of 50,000 US then, isn't it, yeah?
44 mil red gold case. I mean, it is beautiful.
I got to see the presentation of this one, and it's not the kind of thing I generally have any interest in, but I watched it start to finish because the presentation and the watch itself demanded attention.
Yeah.
Things that maybe people don't know about it. Let's get a 90-hour power reserve.
Yeah, which I believe, Sam, that's the same as the HM, isn't it? Because that was one thing that shocked me about the HM Perpetual is it's a 90-hour power reserve. Oh, it's 70 or 90 hours. I think it's 90 though, isn't it? Yeah, it's a long, long power reserve.
Yeah, yeah. So sort of hand wound. And the moon complication itself is accurate to, it needs to be corrected one day every 122 years, unless you forget to set it or keep it wound. Then you'll be forever corrected.
Yeah, and is it, I actually haven't seen this, but has it got the same kind of a setting guide on the case back as the HM Perpetual does as well, which kind of obviously aids with the setting of it?
Yeah, yeah. So the moon phase indicator, showing the age of the moon on the back, so it makes it a little bit easier to set. Hmm. I think it's like a quick set as well.
Excellent. So if you do forget, you're not having to wait 100 years to reset it.
Yes.
Excellent.
Exactly.
And what other watches have you spotted that you want to talk about?
Main thing was Nomos. I had a little listen to their video, and some of the claims they made in the video were quite funny. They said, wrote this down. So branding, so they're saying how, they do in-house movements, which a lot of brands don't do. They said, branding is like Donald Trump. A claim is made over and over until people start to think it's true.
Ooh. Ooh, I wonder who that could be aimed at. Naming more names.
They also claim that their watches, or watches in general, but aimed at their watches, increase in value, which I thought was quite a bold claim.
Yeah.
And they said that their watches are too sophisticated for the mainstream watch world.
Interesting.
But I do love Nomos. I just thought that was quite a few bold.
Yeah, there's a couple of bold claims in there. What's your thoughts between the two colorways, between the kind of, I suppose, the kind of grey, cool grey, and the orange? What one took your fancy?
Probably the orange a little bit more. But yeah, cool grey is cool as well. Yeah, I like it. I think, was it the cool grey represents the woes of lockdown? So maybe not the nicest reminder to have on your wrist.
Yeah, spend loads of money to remember how miserable you were for the last year. Yeah. The orange one, to be fair, has caught my attention. I do quite like bright colours, but again, I think that would make quite a nice summer watch as well, because similarly to the Oris, it's not mega box. I think that in UK is going to be just over a grand, maybe 1100, 1200, something like that.
1100.
And I quite like, there's two sizes. Is it 36 and 38, I think, the one, isn't it? Which, yeah, so you've got, again, those kind of two unisex sizes that I suppose will hit the sweet spot for a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah. I think, yeah, they're fun. And also, yeah, in-house movement at that price point, I think they've both got open case backs. So I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, nice looking little watch for sure. Was there anything that immediately sprung to you, thought, if I had the money, I'd buy that?
The Reverso.
Yeah.
At Reverso.
You and everybody you and else.
Everybody else.
Oh, that is, yeah.
It's pretty special.
Stunning.
Well, thanks for popping on for a quick chat. Sam, we need to get you on for another show just yourself.
Yeah, do. Yeah, that'd be good. To catch up on.
And if people want to check out what you're up to, where can they find you?
Yeah, so I'm at Time on Our Hands on Instagram. I also have my little business up and running. So at Watch Concierge Services for any buying, selling or sourcing. And time of the week, every Wednesday, watch us live. Myself, Lucy and USA Sam. It's really good getting into the flow of it. We had quite a few people watching live last week and the chat's always really busy and fun. So yeah,
excellent. Great to hear.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for popping on and we will catch you again soon.
Good. No Take worries. Care, Sam.
Take care. Bye.
Well, a watch we actually get sent through from a brand just before it launched was a Mulliger Glashütte, and it's the SAR Rescue Timer. This turned up and I didn't really know what to think of it until I got some wrist shots outside, then came back in and had a look at it, and it glowed like a torch. The entire dial is covered in luminescent material and I've not seen anything quite as good as this. I've seen different lume dials in the past. We had a couple in from Stratton and various other companies, but this one here, the shine it gives off, and the fact that the date disc seems to be loomed as well underneath, it's just something a little bit crazy, a little bit different. Have you had a look at this one?
Yeah, I have. It kind of comes alive at night, so to speak, isn't it? It's like the mild-mannered janitor during the day.
I know exactly what it is. It reminds me of back in the 90s when I was just a kid and I bought myself a Timex Indiglo.
Ah, it has got that, absolutely. Yeah, it's just it's got
but
that
this doesn't
whole
need
vibe
a battery
to
accomplish it.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a really nicely put together quality mechanical watch as well.
Yeah, decent company. It's one we don't really talk too much about, which is unfortunate. We probably should do a little bit more considering we met the guy that runs the company when he came to Glasgow, to James Port and Son. But this one here, really nice, lots of different strap options, 42mm case, and it's got a different aesthetic about it. The way that the markers at the 3, 6 and 9, it looks almost Fleeger-esque. But it isn't.
Yeah, it's definitely got a wee bit of that kind of Fleeger vibe to it, doesn't it? But as you say, it's definitely not a Fleeger. But yeah, I suppose it's like nothing else really aesthetically, which, you know, some will love it, some will hate it. But, you know, it stands out in its own right. It's not like really anything else that I can think of off the top of my head. So yeah, that's always nice when you see something that is just that little bit different from the norm.
We probably should have said right at the beginning of the show, play along at home. Mizzy L is on the chat here listening in, so he can create the show notes as we're recording, which means you'll be able to check out the pictures of all the different watches as we're speaking about them in order.
And indeed.
One here, if you're not looking at the show notes, it looks a little bit like, I reckon, Iron Man 1, the Mark 1 suit that he made in the cave.
Mm-hmm.
It's got something about it. I think it's the colouring. But yeah, cracking looking watch, really good brand, very underrated. So hopefully we can do something about that, considering we've got this wee guy in for test and we can get some video and something popped up in Instagram about it. Retail price suggested at 1800 UK, and it's got the SW201 inside. Didn't get a chance to talk about Tag, didn't get a chance to talk about Hublot. Probably a good thing, most of you are listening would be thinking, but actually there was a couple of things that they dropped this year that were quite interesting. It's not from a horological point of view, from a material sciences point of view. Hublot brought out a new, I'm calling it the Bumblebee, because that's exactly what this watch looks like. It is a yellow ceramic that is basically unscratchable, and they're the guys that figured out how to do a proper deep red ceramic a few years back, and Rolex still haven't managed to figure that little trick out, because their Pepsis, although they keep iterating and bringing out new versions, it's still a little pinky purple when it should be red. This yellow Hublot is €29,000, which is round about the ballpark they charge for that kind of thing. And on the Tag front, I think it was the Aquarace, or the new versions that they brought out. I'm not a big Tag guy. I like their Tourbillon, but apart from that, not really super hot on them. But this one, sort of entry level price, is a bit different. They've taken the Rolex Cyclops and they've popped it under the crystal instead of on the top.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit like AP do on some of the offshore divers. They've got that. They've also changed the cut. This is something that is stupid and you would think most people would do it, but they don't. They've taken the minute hand and they've changed the lume colour on it, so it's a different colour from the hour hand. So at a quick glance, especially if you're using it underwater, you can tell. Now that's a brilliant idea that is so simple, most other people should have thought about it. And they've played around with a couple of other bits and pieces on the watch. So yep, I actually quite like that one.
Again, I'm kind of like you as well. Probably give tag a bit of an undue hard time, to be honest with you. You know, I don't really know why. You know, I suppose ultimately if you're admitting to yourself it's a little bit of snobbery. I do, you know, like they do some stuff that I like. You know, I do like their Monacos. I do quite like the Monaco. You know, because again,
because it's what they're known for.
Well, exactly that for me. If you see a Monaco, you're like, okay, that's definitely a tag. And it's weird. It shows you how things can play with you, because obviously, you know, like a lot of the older ones were only branded Heuer, and then they became Tag Heuer, and obviously they've now got some of these kind of heritage pieces that they've gone back again to branding Heuer only in some of their pieces. So they're a bit of a funny one. I think it maybe for me is like some other brands, there's a bit of association that's going on that, you know, in terms of who buys these watches or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I quite like some of the little things they've done. The little bit of dropping the kind of Cyclops under the crystal rather than over it makes perfect sense, to be honest with you. I mean, it means totally. It's nice and smooth and it's not going to catch on it. Well, it's not that it catches much, but it's smooth on the top and it gives a nice aesthetic. Looks good. You know, it'd be nice to see maybe that brand over the next few years coming out with a few things that are a little bit different. Over the last, I'd say, 4 or 5 years, they've done the odd thing that's kind of piqued my interest a little bit, but it's always, mm-hmm. it feels like it's never kind of got going, so to speak. So it'd be nice to see if they could maybe get going. I mean, it does scare me when you look at their plethora of watches that they make and how many models they make. It scares you. You know, it's a bit like going to a restaurant and having a 25 page menu. You know, you just get choice paralysis. You have no idea what you're looking at.
It's a little bit like in Japan, if you looked at Seiko.
Yeah,
Seiko
probably.
Make a good watch for an inexpensive price. They do digital, they do analog, they do mechanical, they do quartz, and then they do Grand Seiko, then they do Credor, then they do King Seiko. So similar kind of thing there. But anyway, we have another guest to drag in. Hopefully he will not outstay his welcome this time. Let's bring in our good friend Ryan. Not to talk about JLC this time, we really hope.
I'm here to talk to you about the third and fourth dials of the Jaeger LeCoultre. Part two
of a series of 12. Oh my god,
I'm going to talk about between the lugs of that watch.
Well, let's talk different tourbillons. Shall we go for the Carol F. Booker?
Yeah, I think it's really cool. It's funny though, because you sent me the text before I saw the images, and they were basically talking about, I know this brand because they do the peripheral rotor. That's not an entirely unique complication anymore, but they've been running it for a while, and certainly at that price point they've really stood out, and I think they do it really, really well. But they were talking about, oh, we've got a peripheral tourbillon, and I was like, what the hell is that going to be? And I started to think about, there was a Blancpain watch some time ago that had a 7-day power reserve indicator on the rotor. And I started to think, are they going to stick like a tourbillon on the frigging rotor? And I was getting these wild visuals in my mind. And then actually it's basically a nice tourbillon. It's instead, so tourbillons are driven around a fixed fourth wheel. Okay. And it's basically a wheel that's fixed. So it has teeth facing outwards. This fixed fourth wheel has teeth facing inwards. And so it's kind of reversed that format. What that means is that the center of the tourbillon area is a little bit less cluttered than usual, because usually you've got that fixed, blocking out the light. You've got that fixed wheel in the middle. Instead, it's kind of like cut out. And that's pretty cool. I think what they're doing here is they're finding ways of applying the term peripheral to several areas of the technology in this watch, because they've decided that that's their thing, and I understand that. But it looks nice. It's a nice kind of open apertured tourbillon up at 12 o'clock. It's got a minute repeater, and I really like the way they've sort of separated out the hammers and the centrifugal governor are sitting like quite nicely fitted within the front of the watch, within the dial. They just look really snug there, and they're quite sort of modern looking. You know, it's a little less traditional vibe minute repeater, and you can see around the periphery. That really nice, those nice gongs. And I think, so they got it's an automatic, so they got the peripheral rotor around the back, so you get a nice view of the movement, not being blocked by the rotor. But yeah, aside from that, it is a fairly standard minute repeater, but for them, that's a big deal. And they have, you know, they haven't just executed a normal one. Also, there are some safety features around the activating of the repeater, means you can't pull out the crown, and there's a little indicator that says when it's been activated at 9 o'clock in a little aperture. Really, really gorgeous.
Well, I was in their group when they were talking about this. I think it was I can't remember. All the days have blended together, but there was a good press conference about it where the guy that runs the company was explaining that it's, if not the only one of very few watch brands that have gone for hundreds of years that have always remained within the same family.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's always a case of it went somewhere, maybe it came back again, or with Moser, you know, other people decided to buy the name, or Chipek, it's a Kickstarter brand with a lot of venture capital behind it. This company, it's a brand, again, we've been talking about brands we don't usually talk about on the show today. We've talked about Arnold & Son that don't get a lot of press. We've talked about Maluga Shooter.
Nice.
And this is another one here that up until the John Wick movies, not a lot of people were talking about them.
Oh, wow. I don't recall them being featured in the John Wick movies.
Yeah,
I've seen all three of them.
There you go.
Interesting. That's cool. Yeah. I've always been into the peripheral rotor that they did, and it's in the book. And really understated brand.
What book's that, Ryan?
The DFS catalogue.
He did well.
It's in the Argos.
It's Argos Book of Dreams.
My first minute repeater.
I think it's a good look. I think it's a decent looking watch.
That's cool.
You're well aware I absolutely detest the fact that folk cut holes to show tourbillons, but aside from that, I don't like that part of it aesthetically, but the hammers actually look fantastic on it. It's really nicely done, and they should annoy me in the same way as cutting a hole for a tourbillon, but it does look really good. It's got a nice balance.
They fit
balance
really
to it.
Well there.
They do. Actually, it's like little horns almost, isn't it? You know, they look good.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think if they'd covered up the tourbillon,
that would have looked amazing, that watch.
It would look killer, and you'd see it on the other side. I think that would look even better.
Yeah.
It
seems to be a thing, doesn't it? It's like, I mean, I think I can only think off the top of my head of one recent tourbillon that doesn't show itself through the dial.
So apart from that one, Ryan, what other stuff have you been looking at?
There's another tourbillon. There's a flying tourbillon. There's a flying tourbillon that's being straddled by Black Panther.
Oh no, here we go.
I can't believe, have you guys not talked about this yet in the podcast?
Of course we have.
How much time have you spent talking about this?
Yes.
Not as much as you're about to.
I was going to say, knowing that it's, I just thought there's no way you've gone through this whole thing without talking about this. Absolutely.
Right, okay.
I mean, it is
Take
just
the floor.
It has caught fire online right now, and deservedly so.
For all the wrong reasons.
Yeah. I'm gonna tell you a couple of things that I quite like about this watch first, okay? Mm-hmm. The tourbillon looks really cool, and sort of just sitting there at the center, and with the depth of the watch, I think it looks really, really cool. The detail on the execution of the Black Panther guy that is sitting there, legs akimbo, is phenomenal. It's just the overall aesthetic and the finished piece that is utter trash. I mean, as someone who likes comic books, I'm not a huge geek, but I love the animation. I love the drawing. You know, you just need to Google Black Panther and you will see some phenomenal images of Black Panther. If you just look at the way this thing looks, it is really bad. I mean, it looks crap, basically. Yet it's been executed incredibly well.
Yeah, and that does summarize what we said earlier, to be fair, which is it will be beautifully made, no two ways about it. And, you know, the word that I used to describe it was it's crass. It's just, there's so many things about it. It's just, the sum of its parts are not greater than the parts itself.
And, you know, the concept, apart from being unwearably large, I think the RO concept line is really fascinating, and they've come up with some phenomenal watches. I'm just, what exactly is the concept that they're pushing here? Is it a commercial concept? Because it just strikes me as the CEO just running rampant with not enough people in the room to just gag him for a bit and hold him back and say, okay, we're going to get this deal with Marvel. Let's think. What should we do? Not let's just stick an actual... It's too on the nose. It's too obvious. There's nothing about it that I think is a good idea.
All righty. Anything else you want to catch us up on before you head off?
Did you do Langer?
We did. We touched on it briefly, but you know more about it than we do.
Yeah, it's not a huge amount. Because the new perpetual calendar looks very similar to the Torbjörn version that had already been out there, but it brings in that day-night indicator hidden behind the moon phase, which is just one of those complications in the last few years that is simple yet complete poetry. Really nice looking QP, but to be honest with you, just makes me still yearn after the moon phase Lang one anyway. And then they have this smaller sized, 36 or so. It's not aventurine, but it's a blue gold flux. Gold flux dial. It looks like aventurine, and it's just stunning. I'm sure this is supposed to be a lady's watch, but it's incredible. It looks really, really beautiful, and I just like the little star. They've done little star indices on the chaptering, but the dial itself is just, it's like a night sky in a really, really good way.
Excellent. All right, Ryan. Well, thank you very much for coming on and being concise this time.
To the point.
All right, chaps. Yes,
and if people want to buy a book for some light relief at bedtime, what would you recommend?
I would recommend that you get the Wristwatch Handbook, which is available already, or you wait and wait, because there'll be another one coming out soon. Not soon. Ooh. But
soon, not soon.
Wait, like,
sorry,
wait.
Not sorry. We will wait. Excellent. Well, hopefully that'll be out in time for Christmas 2024.
There we go. It'll be written by Christmas.
Yes. Written. 2023.
Okay. It'll be written. Yeah, like Black Panther. I'm going to straddle this book.
like a wrecking ball. Yeah. Lovely. Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Ryan, for popping in. And we will catch you again soon for a nice little drunk clubhouse live show.
Totally. Cheers, chaps.
Couple of watches just before we finish up, because we didn't have a chance to catch up with them the last time. Your listener, Dan, is a brand that sent us a watch in recently, and I fell in love with it. Never going to be able to afford it. $40,000. But they have brought out a revised version. The one I had in was the Blast Tourbillon, and the new one is the Blast Earthstriker. So it has basically got a chiming mechanism installed, which has obviously dramatically increased the price, as you would expect, up past $100,000, but it is a cool looking piece. I prefer the one I had in because it had less stuff going on, so the view through the dial, through the case back and the movement, etc., was nicer, I think. But they've also got a new Diver X Skeleton Edition, and that again is something a little bit different, a little bit more crazy. It's got some Planet Ocean colouring about it, it's got some orange and blue, and the X is even more striking. Looks even more like a superhero belt from X-Men.
Yeah, it's quite pronounced.
Something to check out there. Very pronounced. Mizzy L will have some photos and links in the show notes for that one. I bet he's absolutely cursing me at the moment because I'm rattling through all these new watches so quickly and he's got more work to do. Next up, the Icon range from Maurice Lacroix. We had a video end of last year, I think it was. We filmed it and we dropped it maybe January, February time with their CEO. Mm-hmm. And it's a brand, again, people don't give enough credit to. They look at and they just go, meh, looks like they're trying to rip off AP or they're trying to rip off Patek. But the heritage, the history, it goes back decades, almost 50 years, I think, as he was telling me. And the new releases they've got out this year are absolutely fantastic. There are updates to some of the ones we saw last year. The bronze Venturer that I got in, they have now got a new version of that that's not green. And they've got something called the White Amazon, which is a 38mm. And it's got a white bezel and diamonds, but it's 38mm, and hopefully we can get our hands on that one as well. Unfortunately, because of the diamonds, it's one I probably wouldn't buy, but the fact it's got the white bezel and the white strap, which they actually said it's made of a material, unlike other white straps that are made of rubber, etc., that mark up and get dirty very quickly, the material that they're using has been tested in the field to make sure that it won't get dirty and sort of miscoloured quickly, which is quite good. Have you had a look at any of these ones?
Yeah, again, aesthetically, I quite like them, to be honest. There's only one bit that the bezel, I don't dislike it, but I can't decide whether I like it. I know that sounds strange, but yeah, that's the only bit that gives me cause to, you know, kind of considerate, but actually lovely looking watch. You know, a couple of nice pieces. I mean, the one you had, it was a great looking watch. I really liked it. I know there's a couple of daft wee things as well. Like, I wasn't keen on the logo and the strap, but I think even they confirmed that that doesn't need to be there if you don't want it. So yeah, accessible price point, good looking watch. Can't really knock it too hard, to be honest.
No, and they also had a new release, their Master Grand Date, which has a new in-house caliber in it.
Yeah, the digital date.
Yeah, and you obviously don't like when you see a tourbillon on the front. This doesn't have that, but you can kind of see the main parts of the movement, so you'd probably not like looking at that one too much.
It's fair. I mean, I give tourbillons a hard time because it's probably the most obvious one that they cut the hole in the dial for, but I'm generally not a fan of anything cut into the dial. I just think it ruins the aesthetic of it for me. But, you know, I do like some facets of that watch, the digital date alike. You know, it's got some nice design cues on it that I think are a little bit different for them as well. And again, you know, the other thing for them is that the price point that those watches are at, those kind of features typically you're not really seeing unless you're spending quite a lot more money. So for folk who do like that aesthetic, you know, taking my aspects of the aesthetic out of it, folk do like that aesthetic, and for folk who do that maybe can't afford to stretch into the, you know, high four figures, you know, into five figure type price points for watches, it means there's now something out there that's a real good quality watch at a nice price point that's maybe more accessible for them with that aesthetic going on. So I'm sure it'll find a home in a few people's wrists, that watch.
Definitely. Well, that is the end of our show. It has been a bumper week. We're not done yet, still a couple more days to go, and we put the call out to everybody on Instagram and in the last show. If you wanted to get your voice heard, if you wanted to send us a voice note by direct message on Instagram, or if you left a comment on a couple of the posts, we're going to drop that into the next show. So you've had two shows from our writers group. Next show is basically going to have all the interaction from listeners and people that follow us through the website, through Facebook and through Instagram. So there'll be a lot of that. And you still have time. If you've got thoughts, suggestions for any of these brands and where they should be taking things in the future, if you've got comments on the releases that have come out, what was a hit, what was a miss, what they should have done differently, get in touch, let us know. You've got 60 seconds on Instagram to drop us a message, and if you don't like it, you can delete it, you can start again. Obviously include a note of your first name, because reading out usernames is a pain in the arse. Apart from that, I think we've kind of covered most things. There are a few more bits and pieces that we will drop into the next episode. For instance, there was some stuff from Bon Mercier, there was a new Resonance, stuff from Chrono Swiss, and you were wanting to talk a little bit more about the Hermes, and I was wanting to talk about the Skull Snake Carpe Diem from Louis Vuitton. So there's still tons more to talk about.
Some PGA stuff as well in there that look great. You know, there's loads of things that we've missed, but I'm sure we can catch up on that over the next week or so when we're dropping some other bits in and bob. But yeah, I think we've covered most of the big hitters for sure.
So thank you for listening in. Be sure to subscribe, check out the show. It's out twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays. We're big on Instagram, loads of watch shots on there, stuff we do ourselves, plus new press shots when new stuff gets released. We've got a Facebook group that's bustling away with a few thousand people on it, and we've got a website, scottishwatches.co.uk. That's where you can find all our articles, written reviews, news and previews, and we've got a YouTube channel as well. Check that out. And that is really about it. So thanks for listening.
Indeed. So it's a goodbye from me and...
Oh, reversal. Goodbye from him.
Goodbye. We'll be right back.